Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a singer-songwriter who just came through Chicago for the Goose Island Block Party. Chicago, put your hands together for Ted Leo.
Everyone in Chicago, put your hands together?
Unless you're driving, right?
Moonlight shattered on this stretch of sea. How many times I stood here mapping things out differently. But I can't go back.
Can't go back.
Cross the road and run back to the town. How many times I've run this way and how it runs me down. But I can't go back.
That's the track Can't Go Back from Ted Leo's new solo album, The Hanged Man, the album that many are calling the best of his career. It's the first album he put out in a couple of years, not counting the Both, the album he did with collaborator Amy Mann. Ted Leo and the Pharmacists have been an indie punk staple for years. It's hard to believe it's been over 15 years since the 2001 album, The Tyranny of Distance. Ted Leo currently lives out in Rhode Island, but he spent some time in his life right here in the area in South Bend, Indiana. Going to Notre Dame. One of the best songwriters working today. My pleasure to welcome Ted Leo to the Big Table. Good to see you.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
I say it's the first in a while. I mean, really, since 2010. You do the Both with Amy Mann, and that was in between there. But talk about, like, you got a lot of great reviews on this record, but talk about the time off and getting back in the saddle.
It is interesting because I was only able to look back when I got to the end of this time and sort of finished the album and realized that, oh, I've actually done a lot of work in the last almost decade, because it felt like I was spinning my wheels for so long because I wasn't actually putting anything new out there, you know. But I was touring a lot. I was playing solo a lot. I did the whole record and touring cycle with Amy as the Both. You know, but I just was living a life for a while and trying to figure out how to even conceive of what a next record for me was going to look like.
Yeah.
I had... you know, I was in a bit of a stagnant place with my label, and I had a lot of personal stuff go down that, you know, really just required being
to be
around.
There. Right,
yeah,
right,
you know,
right.
And if again, like it felt in the midst of it like I wasn't doing as much. But then I looked back and I had this huge body of work.
Yeah, I wonder if it's expectations too, because you and Ted Leo and the Pharmacists put out records every 2 or 3 years. It's an expectation we're going to get new music front facing, meaning we're going to see it beyond just touring and things like that.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I have to keep putting stuff out so that I can keep touring if I want to keep making music professionally, because that's the only way that, you know, to earn a living doing it. So there was also that fear, like, you know, every time I would get to the end of a month and look at my bank account, you know, and be like, whoa, I really have to get a record out, you know.
Yeah. This, you mentioned it, you mentioned a lot of different interviews, that this record came from a personal place, The Hanged Man. You talk about, at one point, personal desolation, you know. Talk about that. Talk about writing from a place that's personal.
Yeah, I mean, I always have to a certain degree, though I have, you know, rarely have I had a number of years that hit me with as much, you know, to potentially write about as the last few. But I'll tell you, I don't think I really ever set out specifically to, you know, set myself a task like I need to write about this or I should, you know, I think I would probably be a bad person if I saw, oh, yeah, that's some good writing material there.
You'd be a comedy writer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, these things find their way out. And then eventually what I did have to come to terms with was not I should write about this, but am I going to allow myself to write about this stuff? Right. And then how am I going
to do it? How do you do that as an artist? That's such a heavy thing to think about, you know, the topics that you're going to approach in your art and your song and in the music that you produce. How do you convince yourself? Where's the line to say, yes, I'm going to write about this. I'm going to put this on the album. I'm going to open myself up.
I think the task is just making it a good song, honestly. You know, if it's a good song, it's a good song. And I hope that it made some good songs out of it. You know, you just do what you do with every other song, which is sit down, figure out what you want to say with each piece, find the best way to say it. If you don't want to be quite as direct about something, you find another way to say it, you know?
You know, I think about the old adage of the novelist. You know, you live your life before you write your novel. Go out and experience as much as you can. You know, be in a position so when you sit down, you have experiences to draw from. As a singer-songwriter, especially one that's had such a tremendous, prolific career as yourself, do you take on that kind of philosophy when things are happening? Like, live my life, you know, the good stuff that happens, the bad stuff that happens, and at a later time, I can reflect and put this into my art?
I don't know, to be honest with you. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I think I never really approach any of this, either life or art making, you know, with a specific agenda. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I don't have, you know, long-term goals or anything, but I kind of try to take things as they come, and when it's time to do something, I try to do it. You know?
What's great about The Hanged Man, the new album, is it's very diverse in the music that you put out, meaning not just the song, the lyrics, things of that nature, but the music. You go from fast tempo, which you've been known for, to much more diverse, slow stuff, changing up the rhythm. Was that intentional for you to essentially do something that you, Ted Leo, has never done before?
I will say that there was some intention in that, yeah. I think that once I really understood that the process of this record was going to be largely me alone, building my studio and making the record at the same time and really mad scientisting, you know, everything, I think I did make a little bit of a conscious decision to not stifle certain impulses that, you know, like some of the weirder, slower stuff on the record is always with me and has always been in my head. Yeah. But, you know, I would often not let it come out as such. You know, I'd have to beat it up a little bit into, you know, some other kind of form. And I think I did make a conscious decision to just let it come out the way it came out. And at the end of the process, I had around 30 songs, only 14 of which made it to this very long double record. So I have this whole other batch of songs that I have to do something with still. And in looking at it, you know, some of it is very much in line with, you know, what you might expect from a Ted Leo and the Pharmacist record, hopefully with a little bit of songwriting evolution in one direction or the other. And some of it is new and weird and spooky at times even, you know.
Yeah.
And what I had to stop myself from doing was forcing the only slow and weird and spooky record on people.
Because you find yourself going there? Like that's what you were gravitating to?
Yeah, because, you know, that was new and exciting for me. And I just want to shove that out there and make people deal with that, you know. But at the end of the day, I think I did find a way to have a nice dynamic, you know, up and down over the course
of the record. Considered to be one of the best of your career. Everyone giving great reviews to the new Ted Leo record, The Hanged Man, which is out now. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. And I'd love to talk to you more about the process because, you know, just the idea of you building a studio in your home and being isolated like that to create music, there's a lot of questions I have about that experience. Okay. Ted Leo's my guest tonight on the Download at the Big Table. Stay with us.
As I was walking through a life one morning, the sun was out, the air was warm, but oh, 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 I was cold. And though I must have looked a half a person to tell the tale in my own version, it was so only then that I felt whole.
Survive. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio at the big table, Ted Leo, longtime singer-songwriter, Ted Leo and the Pharmacist. He's got a new album, The Hanged Man. You've played Chicago many a times. Mm-hmm. Talk about your experience with Chicago. I mean, what are some of the memories that come back for you?
So I started going to see shows here in the late 80s, and I remember seeing bands at the Cubby Bear and Dreamers, places in the Metro, obviously. And, you know, I think my experience playing here has been pretty similar to my experience playing other places in that for a number of years, you know, we toured so much that we really did kind of build our audience in the old, you know, the old 80s hardcore circuit way of just like, get, you know, the get in the van, we jam Econo thing where you just go, right. You go back and you go back and you meet people and you meet more people. And so, you know, our shows gradually grew from smaller clubs to the bigger clubs and then a little bit back to some smaller clubs. You know? Yeah. But the person who books me has been in Chicago for years. So we always, you know, spend a couple of days off so we can.
I was going to say, do you try to when you go to cities that you know, Chicago, even West Coast, do you find yourself trying to build in extra days to actually take in the city?
You know, rarely to take in the city, more to, you know, see people you have to see and do other things you have to do. But because you're doing that, it does afford you a little more time to actually take in the city.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to your music. I am fascinated with the idea that you built your studio in your house. And you recorded and produced and put this record together, The Hanged Man, all by yourself. And I don't mean like, oh my God, congrats, Ted, you can do it all by yourself. But just there's so much that goes into that, especially when it comes to the creative emotions that go around being an isolated artist. We know that from painting. You know, people will be alone with their stuff. Writing is that way. But music is almost always collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
For you as a songwriter, take us through your process of collaborating with yourself.
Right. Well, it's hard for me to extricate the production aspect from the writing aspect, honestly, because doing it the way I did it informed a lot of the writing. You know, once I really felt that I had my sounds together the way that I wanted them to be, it actually opened up even more doors for me to expand what I was able to write.
Which is unique, because a lot of times it'll be demos done, the lyrics are first, and the production's afterwards.
Right. It is kind of funny. There are a couple of songs where once I figured out how to record to tempos, like to set tempos, you know, which was a new thing for me, you know, I was demoing to tempos. And there are a couple of songs where there are some artifacts that made it to the final version, like from early demos, like a little guitar solo here, a little guitar solo there. I would be listening, like,
huh.
Well, I don't need to change that. It sounds good and it's in tempo. Yeah, so, you know.
The beauty of producing your own stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Right. But, I mean, you know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it. I enjoy tinkering in that way. Not so much mechanically, but sonically, yeah. You know. And I really did have fun doing it. And my normal Pharmacist drummer, Chris Wilson, played drums on most of the songs on the record. And it was a real sense of accomplishment to be able to invite someone into this like hermetically sealed, you know, world that I'd created for myself when I felt like I finally knew what I was doing well enough to track.
What do you do to get past the moments when you're stuck? When you're all by yourself, you're solo. Artists have that moment. And
yeah.
That's why a lot of people work with other people to kind of get through that.
It can go one of two ways. Sometimes I will be able to say to myself, you know, you've done this before. You can do this again and, you know, get out the rhyming dictionary and a notepad and, you know, just actually work, you know, in that way that you were talking about novelists earlier, like in that way that novelists are sometimes like, I get up and I make my coffee and I write for, you know, 3 hours a day and it doesn't matter if I don't use it. Like, that's my writing time. And
right.
Sometimes I can force myself to work that way. And sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes I can't force myself to work that way and I just have to walk away for a while.
Yeah. So much is made about how much you're evolving as a singer-songwriter with the personal things in your life, but there's also the musicianship, and we'll also talk about the production. But how do you think you've evolved as a multi-instrumentalist? Because whether it's guitar, bass, other stringed instruments, whatever it might be, you're doing all of it. Okay. So how do you evolve and make yourself a better player with those instruments?
I actually think that the recording and producing aspect of it, like while writing and while working on this stuff, helped me become a better player with a lot of it. Because I was working alone and on my own time and in my own time, I could just keep working on things. You know, I could keep trying to nail that thing that I wasn't quite feeling right, you know, and I think I actually improved my chops on a lot of instruments by doing it. You know, the danger is getting too obsessive about stuff. But I feel like I was never super afraid of that. I've seen enough examples of other people doing that, and I think I have enough perspective and self-awareness to, you know, have been able to walk the right side of that line. But I do think that just the volume of work and the volume of playing just since I started the process of this record has made me a better player, a better singer. And I would also throw my years working with Amy Mann and her band into that pot as well.
That experience being the experience before you started this record, how did that help you? What did you learn from Amy Mann and other seasoned musicians who've been around?
I learned a lot. I mean, I went into working with her with very little knowledge of musical theory, and I literally learned some actual musical theory from her and her band. I think that what I've come to understand about how working with Amy specifically has helped me is that I think that we drew out strengths in each other that were maybe a little dormant, you know, and I think she actually taught me more about what I can do with my own voice and things than I would have pushed myself to learn on my own. You know?
That's interesting, too, because that's that collaborative nature. When we talk about the production, last thing we talk about on the music side, just the producing the record, doing it yourself, whether it be recording or producing or putting the mix together. How have you learned about that? Talk about that experience.
Going back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, a good song is a good song, I stand by that, and it doesn't have to, you know, be a Steely Dan, you know, perfect recorded record for it to be fantastic. Some of the greatest things, you know, that I've ever heard in my life are recorded on a boombox. You know,
and I would say some of the things that you've recorded yourself, early Ted Leo and the Pharmacists.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what I really wanted to do sonically with this was put it in the realm of recordings that I do most enjoy listening to, or that have sort of, you know, most influenced me. And I was joking with somebody about it being somewhere between Discharge and Steely Dan, you know, and that is
a good place to be.
And I feel like I kind of achieved that, you know, like I really worked on drum sounds, and I did so much research on specific mics and miking techniques. And over the years, I would gather one, you know, special 60s mic on eBay that I wanted here, and one 70s one there, you know, and I was able to cobble together a little collection of things that really did start to work for me. And then also, again, the academic stuff about learning about frequencies. What is less 8K going to do for this snare sound? You know, like, there's a lot.
Do you think, you know, when you think about your career, is this all new material to you, or new information to you? I mean, because you've been around music your entire life. But the idea of going after working with Amy Mann, you have a whole different appreciation of music?
Probably, yeah. I've always had my hands pretty deep in the, you know, making of a record. I've never just handed it off to someone and let them run with it. But on the technical side of things, I also never really, you know, learned how to do it myself. I would ask people to help me achieve my ideas, you know. And I have, I think, evolved into being able to just achieve my ideas.
Ted Leo's my guest, longtime singer-songwriter. Ted Leo and the Pharmacists, of course, one of the best indie punk rock bands, punk, indie rock and indie punk, right in there somewhere, to come out in years. Of course, been playing since the 80s. Ted Leo, my guest tonight, talking about the new album, The Hanged Man. We'll take a quick break, get the update on tonight's news, and we'll continue our conversation. Ted Leo at the big table. Stay with us.
The contract's a joke, but when you see smoke, you run toward the fire because you must. They all called your name when the crash finally came and left you to pick up the dust. I saw you walking in silence down to the bridge, but nothing went over the side. So I guess to someone with your heritage, withdrawal like consent is implied. And it's true.
Welcome back to the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, singer-songwriter Ted Leo. Ted Leo and the Pharmacists, a longtime great indie punk, indie rock staple. Ted Leo's got a solo album, The Hanged Man, which is out now. You talked a little bit about the personal stuff. One of the things was your relationship with the industry. You talk about the music, your label, you fall out with the label. This is more independent in the sense that you're producing it yourself. How did that experience, kind of going through the meat grinder with the music industry, how does that affect you now? How has that changed Ted Leo?
Well, you know, it drove me to think more seriously about crowdfunding, which has changed my life crazily drastically in ways both artistic and otherwise, because, you know, I'm not anti-record label. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am without the help of all the great labels that I've worked with over the years, including Chicago's own Touch and Go.
Yeah.
And I would not have been able to do as successful a crowdfunding thing as I did, you know, had I not built an audience with the help of all these amazing people and all these amazing labels. But, man, it has really shown me that all of that work, you know, it wasn't for nothing. In the past few years, I did feel a little bit out in the wilderness, you know. Some of that was my confidence being shaken by a lack of support from a lot of different quarters, but including my label, you know. But the way people poured out for the Kickstarter that I ran was just gobsmacking. Like, I remember, you know, I was nervous about whether it was going to fund at all, let alone in one day. And by 4 p.m. on the day that it funded, I was walking across the floor to the bathroom, and I was like, hey, wait a minute, this is going to fund today. And I had this weight that I didn't even know I'd been carrying for who knows how long, and I just felt it, like, dissipate. And then I was able to just kick into high gear, and I could finish the album the way
it was.
I wanted.
Motivating. It was inspiring.
So
right?
Motivating, yeah. And I wasn't done with the album at that point, and I was able to finish the album the way I wanted to finish it. I was able to get it mastered with the people I wanted to master it. I was able to have the people work on the art, you know, who I wanted to have work on the art, which, by the way, the cover is by a Chicagoan, Emil Ferris, who has this great graphic novel set in Chicago called My Favorite Thing is Monsters that I highly recommend. And then also I was able to put together this band that I'm on tour with, which, ironically, having made the record almost entirely myself, is the biggest band that I've ever toured with. It's like a six-piece. We have a saxophone, you know, and it's
that's
great.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about it, listening to you. It's, to me, so telling that when you're jamming a Kano and you're doing everything you can to – you're the band and you're trying to get record labels to pay attention. You're going city to city and you're trying to build your audience. And they come out of the woodwork to support you. Every time they come out, they buy a 7-inch or possibly come out to the show and spend money on merch, but they know they're giving to the band to help them get to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how it's kind of gone full circle. Kickstarters and crowdsourcing, you got to a point where that at first was like a tech startup thing that we weren't sure about, but now it almost gives musicians that same feeling, that feeling that there once was this idea that your support would help us get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's your support helps this artist that you love create.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the whole thing, I mean, the whole label model, the whole crowdfunding model is ultimately just about shared risk, you know, and mutual support. And the fact that people, you know, if you go this crowdfunding route, are able to get in on the process earlier is actually kind of cool in a way. You know, I mean, I think it's going back to speaking about labels, like, I would recommend that labels themselves figure out how to do this, you know, because
integrate it, right?
Yeah, because right. You know, it, then at the end of your campaign, you know what you got, and you know what you can work with, and you're going to have the ability to give people what they pledged for.
Actually, it'd be a great business model because there's been so many terrible stories about bands that have got advances from labels, and then they have to go to tour it off, and they never actually see a dime or make a living off of the work that they've been doing. So
right.
You feel like this almost flip the economy of this and
yeah.
Say the money that's crowdsourced, you could take a percentage for the label, but the rest goes to the artist.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it would work. I think
why
we
not,
just,
right? I know.
We just saved music, right? Ted Leo in studio. As I think about your work, you have had such a vast career being able to almost do whatever you want. And I know there's sometimes it's not that's the case, but has there ever been a time in your career that's now spanning, what, 3 or 4 decades where you didn't feel inspired to produce the music that you wanted to produce?
No, not really.
Or that this was a job and not a passion?
Well, to answer the in two parts, I've never worked with anybody who has ever pressured me to do something with my music that wasn't what I wanted to do with it. That comes, I think, partially from coming from the truly punk world, where that wouldn't even enter into anybody's head,
right,
you know.
Right.
To those people growing up alongside of me and starting their own labels and continuing that ethos, you know, and also appreciating experimentation and appreciating artistry, and you know, not seeking. Everybody wants to sell records, but not seeking that as the end goal of what we're doing.
Right.
And then to answer your second question about it feeling like a job, I mean, there is no denying that it is a grind and a half out there, you know. But the thing is, you go through the grind to get, like, just take touring as one part of it. You know, you go through the grind to get to the show, and then you get to the show and you grind a little more to make the show happen. But once the show is happening, you're playing music for people.
You're in it.
Yeah, who most of the time actually want to be there to hear the music. And that's, I mean, you have to be grateful for
if you're not
for
enjoying that,
you know?
That, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things to talk about. And I'm intrigued in the sense that because you have such a vast catalog of music, and because you're such a songwriter that loves to sing from the heart and sing about things, you will sing about depressing things that have happened in your life and otherwise. When you get to stage and you have to do a show, and it's a Ted Leo show, people expect you to play certain songs.
Mm-hmm.
Do those songs elicit a response to you? Like, do you feel like, I don't really want to sing this song because it reminds me of the time I was down and out. I don't really, mm-hmm. I hate this song. I really don't want to play this song, but I have to. It's just this great dichotomy when it comes to the relationship with the audience. They want to hear the stuff that you've created in the past, even though it may have been personal for you,
right.
And you don't want to revisit it.
I don't know if this is because of some talent of mine or if I'm just lucky, but I've managed to largely write songs that I have mostly not gotten sick of playing and writing the harder ones in a way that it's harder for me when I first write them. You know, like, I have to get through it, then I can sort of, you know, treat it with a little more distance.
Does the song, with the distance even there, does the song bring you back to that place when you were writing it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I never really lose complete connection with things. And, you know, if those are ones that are resonating with the audience, usually that I get that feedback in the moment, you know, too. So you can't be completely disconnected from it. That said, I mean, you know, as with anything, you have to divest yourself of some emotion and so that you can perform it with the right amount of emotion and not too much emotion. You
right.
know?
Well, a lot of your work is personal. It's about your life, but it's also, some of it's political. Some of it is religious and your background in Catholicism and going to Notre Dame and pushing back a little bit against it.
Yeah, I was
going to
say it's usually anti-religious.
Okay, it's religious in the over.
There's a lot of religious imagery,
right, for sure.
Yeah.
But is that important to you to be able to have commentary in your music, to be able to talk about the things that America's talking about, to talk about the big ticket items like religion or politics, things like that?
It is. I think it's both important to me to do that, and it's also just what I do, you know. I think that it's very important that we have art in the world that doesn't always deal with that sort of stuff, you know. I am very glad that, for example, in the middle of take any Curtis Mayfield album and you'll have political stuff and straight love songs, you know, like, and they both, the world would be a worse place if either of them were missing, you know. And I tend to, I think even when I'm writing about political or social issues or something, I tend to write about them more from a personal place so that it's not a polemic. And I also appreciate polemics, you know. I mean, sometimes I need to kick myself into high gear with you know, some old Reaganomics killing me, Reaganomics killing you, you know, kind of just like 80s, you know, political screed. But it tends to be not how I write. I write about, I was just talking about this with somebody the other day, you know, that sure, there's some stuff on this record that I wrote since the last election and is definitely informed by what's happening and where we're at, but there's really very little point in me yelling at Donald Trump, for example. Like, I'm not really writing for him. You know, I'm writing for the people who are actually listening to my music and who are trying to live through this stuff. So I don't know if that answers your question.
That does. It does. You can't go back, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
As you look forward touring this record, do you see yourself now with your refurbished studio upstairs in your home? Are you just going to be in there every night kicking out the next record and next record? Have you found your groove?
I'm actually pretty excited to be out on the road, and I think that will be the main focus for a while now, provided I get this. We've only been on the tour for a week, and my voice is already like 3 octaves deeper than it usually is, but I'll get a handle on that. Yeah, I think I started at a little bit of a deficit, but I'll get back in the groove.
Right.
And that's going to continue. I mean, this tour over the course of a few different legs takes us to the middle of December. We'll be back here at Talia Hall in November, and then I imagine, you know, we'll probably take a break over the new year and start it up again.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love it. Ted Leo, and the Pharmacists, of course, a longtime indie punk band. The new album, Ted Leo's new solo album, The Hanged Man, is out now. He was just in Chicago for some shows. We'll be back in November. Ted Leo, can't thank you enough for being my guest at the Big Table.
Thank you. Great.
Lonsdale Avenue, I'm coming back home. In fact, I worked it all the time. It hurts to find I never put enough inside. Pleased with every pixel, shame, but that's the game. Left over and out here, I'm not asleep again. Shovel snow.